Hello and welcome to Campfires and Color Wars, a podcast about summer camps and the stories we love to tell about them. Like the time just entering the campgrounds was enough to get a rash. I'm Micah Hart, and for the next 45 minutes or so, we're going to press pause on the world around us, transport back to the days of our adolescence when the school year was just one long rest hour between days at camp. If you have a camp memory you'd like to have featured at the top of the show, you can always email us your short stories at summercamppod@gmail.com. And if you're going to take the time to do that, why not give us a rating or a review on iTunes, on Google Play, just anywhere. If you want to just walk up to people on the streets and tell them how great we are, we appreciate it. Because we want to get the word out and we want to reach as many former campers as we can. This is a pretty cool episode of the podcast. I, again, realize that I say that about every episode, but this one is distinct for a number of reasons. I am so excited to have Ryan Miller from Guster on. Guster is just one of those bands that, at least for me as a Jew, it's just one of those bands that I think is part of the sort of Jewish musical zeitgeist. When I think about the bands that my friends that grew up at camp listened to and were super into in college and beyond, Phish, probably number one, maybe number two as well. But Guster is right up there. And so when I had the opportunity to look into getting Ryan, who's the lead singer, if you're listening to this podcast, I guess you probably know that, but I was super excited to talk to him. And he was super gracious, and I think we had a really good time talking about his experiences at summer camp. Before we get to that, I do just want to take a quick minute. I mentioned this at the very end of the episode because I'm recording this after we taped it, and I mentioned in Bitches and Roses that my rose was that I was going to Austin for a camp reunion of my friends that I grew up with at Jacob's Camp. And as I'm recording this, I am now back from that. And I just, you know, most people will probably fast forward past this, and that's cool. I do it for Mark Maron's podcast and many others. You want to get to the interview. I get it. It's Ryan Miller. It's Guster. Knock yourself out. I did go to Austin, Texas this past weekend and met up with 21 people who I grew up with at camp in some form or fashion at Jacob's Camp in Mississippi. And it was just, I mean, it was just great. It was so, the expression I keep using, I keep hearing other people use who were there is, it was so nourishing for the soul. It was just so nice to spend relaxed quality time with these people who have known me, you know, some of them since I was 7, 8 years old. We just hung out and it was hilarious. It was so camp-like. My friend Susie and I, we were there for the weekend. We wrote a song to the tune of Truth Hurts by Lizzo. Shout out, Song of the Summer by Lizzo. We knew that almost nobody would know what that song was. We were right, but now it's probably stuck in their heads. And my two friends, Joey and Gillian, we did this thing at Jacob's Camp called Camp Torah, which was two staff members at the end of each session would kind of do a recap of the summer thus far and talk about all the cabins and all the different, you know, shenanigans that went on. There's no shenanigans at Jacob's, but you know what I mean. And Joey and Gillian did it one summer to immense applause. It, generally speaking, I would say in my circles, at least, it is known as the best Camp Torah that we ever saw. And I was there a long time, so that, you know, that lends, I think there's some weight to that. They put on a full-on Camp Torah for us. It was probably 20, 25 minutes long. It had 4 songs, one of which was from Hamilton as a rap. Neither of them are rappers, just to be clear. And, you know, a lot of people would look at that and think, what's wrong with you? Why would you waste your time on that? But it was perfect. And just like me and my friend Susie writing the song that we wrote, that's just the kind of dumb shit you do at camp. And it was so nice to be back in the spirit of that and have everybody, you know, just being back in that time and place in our minds, being silly, being goofy, telling old stories. It's frankly the reason why I started this podcast, why I wanted to do it in the first place, was to have a place to do that, because it's not every day that I'm able to get together with so many of my friends from camp. So shout out to everybody who came. We had such a wonderful time. Let this just be a plug to any of you out there listening. Find a time. Find a way to do it. We all have lives. We're all busy. Many of us have kids. It takes advanced planning. It takes time and effort to coordinate it. But if you're proactive, you can make things like this happen. And I'm so glad we did. And I hope it's not 20 more years before we do it again. It was wonderful. And I'm a happy person right now. And I hope to keep the happiness and the good vibes from the weekend going. So sorry for taking so long to get to the interview, because this is, again, a really cool episode. Ryan Miller is awesome. Guster is awesome. And yeah, that's about it. So with no further ado, let's hear it. My conversation with Ryan Miller. So, Ryan, I feel like I need to start here. My sister is a huge fan of yours and was very excited to hear that I was going to be having you on the show. One of her really good friends is a former co-host of the show, Sarah Ballin, who I believe you went to Green with on some level. I'm not exactly sure. All that is to say, I'm very excited to have you on the show, but there are a lot of listeners who are even more excited that you're on the show. So thank you for joining us.
Prepare to be disappointed. You know what I mean? There's a lot of pressure. So I'll try my best.
So you are the lead singer of Guster, which I feel like is in the pantheon of Jewish teenage bands. For me, it's like Guster and Phish, and then maybe The Dead, but that's probably for like an older sort.
That's a good holy trinity of Jew camp bands.
It really is.
That's incredible.
So you know, congrats on that.
Thank you. I'll take it.
It's always fun for me to get people on who I'm somewhat familiar, not just with sort of like what they've been up to, but also a little bit of their camp background. So I'm aware that you went to Green, which, as you and I were talking about before we started, is a sister camp to the camp that I grew up at Jacob's Camp in Mississippi. Let's start there. Tell me what your experience was like at Green Family Camp, and how long were you there? When did you go? Let's get into all that.
I'm pretty sure I went for we did a pre-camp when we were 8. I think I went in 80, so I'm 46. So I think I went when I was 8. I think I went for 10 years. I went for a week when I was really, when I was 8, and then I went for a month every year until I was out of, I didn't go after our senior year, but up until then I went every year.
And so were you a staff member as well?
I made it to Avada, which was I don't know if you guys did that or what it was called. So I think it was basically as you aged out, you were doing you would do kibbutz and then maybe kibbutz and then go to Israel and then Avada. I think that was the way it went.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I think that's about right. And I did it, so I went to Avadan and then never went back as a staff, prepper staff.
And that's because you just were ready to move on, or?
I grew up in Texas and then I went to college. So I think I just didn't do it the summer before I went to school, kind of vibes.
Now, I don't know if this is true or not, but I thought I heard that you were a song leader. Is that true?
Yeah, I think I did that for my last year.
Okay.
Or maybe, no, that was, maybe, I don't think that was a Green. I think that was a Nifty thing.
Okay, so you did Nifty as well.
I did 1 year of Nifty, I think.
Okay.
But I'm telling you, my memory is such crap. But I think, but Green was a month every year, and I don't think I was song leading at Green, or maybe I was doing a little bit of it, but I don't think I was an official dude. You know what I mean?
Well, so I guess my question is, you went for so long, and you're now a musician. was that a part of what led you into being a musician? Did you get involved in music when you were at camp? Was there a guitar activity? Did you, you know, was that part of your formative part, or was that more outside of your camp experience?
You know, it's hard for me to parse really to see. I mean, I definitely remember the music being a part of my camp experience. But I also, like, you know, our mutual friend Matt kind of turned me onto some music too, like in a way that other people that I was hanging out with in high school didn't. So I think that was sort of an indirect influence, but I don't know that it was a direct correlation. Like, if I didn't go to camp, I wouldn't be a musician kind of vibe. But it was, you know, I remember the music and being a song leader and learning some of those songs and even kind of hearing some of those songs now are like so placed, you know. So I know it's kind of in there. It's all in there, you know.
It's funny because we've had an episode or two in the past where we've had people who were song leaders at camp. And to me, song leaders are like the ultimate camp celebrities. Like, they have control. They're the rock stars. And the fact that you actually became a literal rock star after having been a song leader, even if it was in youth group, maybe not at camp, it's for me, it's like just projecting that outward to a larger group of people, but perhaps a similar environment.
Yeah, and I definitely was not singing in high school. Like, I never sang in my high school band, so I think that was maybe you're right. Maybe I just never thought about it that way. But I think me getting in front of people with a guitar in my hand, like, started at my senior year and probably was facilitated by camp. So I'll go with the green light on that. Sure.
So tell us a little bit about what you remember from your experience at Green. You obviously went a long time. You must have had some good times there. What comes to mind when you think back of your time at Green?
Well, what's funny is, like, I grew up in Dallas, and I didn't have a lot of, I was not in, like, the Jewish part of Dallas. So my high school, which was Berkner High School, had 800 kids in its class, but I was one of, like, six Jews. So I think part of the impetus for my parents sending me away to camp was just to get, like, be immersed in Jewish culture. And I kind of, like, didn't love going to temple, and after I got bar mitzvah, I didn't go. So, and I was also just, like, pretty secular. You know, I was definitely, we're not a super religious family. We were a Reformed temple. So I think, you know, I think one part of it that I have come to appreciate was just that I was immersed in, like, Jewish culture in a pretty secular way, but it was still like, oh, this is, like, these are your kind of people historically. So there was something about that that I sort of appreciate, even though I've, you know, now that I have kids of my own, I'm trying to keep them out of religion for a while and maybe now just starting to try to turn them on as they're 11 and 9. But it was also, you know, it was such an interesting way to, like, redefine yourself because the context was completely different. So I think I remember there were some really, like, traumatic moments of camp, but I also, like, I kind of locked into it and had, like, friends every year. And, you know, when we did the color, I think it was the Maccabia, when we did I don't know if you guys did that. Like, I got to be a leader, and that was, like, a huge thing for me. And, like, that was, like, they only chose four out of the 13 kids in the bunk, and I was one of the ones, and that was a huge, you know, early success in my life and stuff. So, like, my bandmates are starting to send their kids to camp, and we live in Vermont, so it's like, it kind of feels silly for us to, and also I travel so much that it just feels bad to, like, send my kids away at this point. But I do, you know, it was such an indelible part of things. And I mean, a month a year is pretty significant, I think, especially when you don't have that kind of independence when you're 14 or 15. And that's the first time you really get to try that stuff on. But also, I was an only child, so that kind of plays into all this a little bit. But I really, like, I wanted to go, and I had really good friends there, and I really loved it was the structure was good for me, and my parents both worked, so when I was home in the summer and I wasn't at camp, it was like a totally, it was like much more Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, your experience sounds a lot like mine, quite honestly. I mean, I grew up in Jackson, Mississippi. I was the only Jewish kid in my class, or maybe there was one other kid. There was not a lot of Jews in general in Jackson. I know Dallas
Yeah,
has a big
exactly.
Jewish population, so summer camp was my ability to be a part of a Jewish environment, and sort of have that. And
And it's funny, like I think when I went to school, because I went to college and went to Tufts in Boston, and I was pre-med for like a year, and then slept in my Chem 1 midterm and was like, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. And my default thing was and actually what I got my degree in was religious studies. And I was like, oh, I think I kind of wanted to, and I took 3 years, 3 semesters of Hebrew because I was thinking, well, maybe I'll be a rabbi, but I didn't believe in God. So I was like, I'm gonna take the Hebrew and I'm gonna take these Bible classes, Old New Testament, and take, a lot of philosophy of religion classes and TA that class a couple times. And I think probably thinking back, I mean, that's where I got my Judaism from, was from camp. But it was so secular that I didn't even believe in God. I just liked it culturally and I thought that would be a cool job. But then at the end, I was like, oh yeah, I can't really be a rabbi if you don't believe in God. But I think that was all part of it,
This is probably for
A
a
different
completely separate podcast, but
podcast.
I actually wonder that a lot because I also studied intensively Judaism. I studied abroad in Israel twice, once in high school and once in college, and learned a lot about religion, and not just Judaism, but other religions too.
Yeah.
And I kind of think the more you learn about it, perhaps for me at least, I would say you and I are alike in this way. I think maybe the less you believe in it,
Yeah, I mean,
but
there's definitely a,
culturally, I think
there's
that's where
definitely
it
a
connects.
secular path to do it, and I still have we lived in New York for a long time, for 11 years, and I have friends like part of the Jewish community. Actually, my buddy who's the editor of Relics magazine, Mike Greenhouse, and he does these really cool like Jewish. He does these things like once a month with this really cool rabbi, and like my buddy Pete Shapiro, his daughter just got bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah and the rabbi, and it was the least God driven. Like those two dudes are like the coolest, just normal dudes ever, and there was like almost no God in it, and I think that it was just like, oh, this is, and it's just taking Judaism in this really far direction, which I can actually, the cool parts of it, which I can kind of get with. So, and I was just in Israel, actually, oddly enough, like less than a month ago. And we were kind of being led around by it, like, we were on a trip, and the tour guide was a very liberal Israeli. So it was again, I was like, oh, this is all so interesting, but there's no real God as a component. And I don't remember God really being a part of camp either in that sense.
Yeah, it's funny. There's probably, someone listening to this right now who is religious would probably say, like, that's God. The absence of
Right.
God is God, or something like
Sure,
that.
sure.
But I will say that at least, from what I've seen, Judaism seems like the religion most comfortable with you being like that, with you feeling like there's not a God, but still feeling a connection to the culture and the religion. Whereas I feel like a lot of other religions, like, no, if you don't get with that, then you're kind of not part of
Yeah.
the program.
I feel like the Buddhists are pretty cool about it too,
Yeah,
though.
okay, that's true.
God as you define it. Yeah, that kind of stuff. But yes, I think that they're very liberal. And I don't, so it's so funny when I think about, I think if I hadn't gone to camp, I would almost feel like, well, I'm not really Jewish. I think going to camp every year actually was part of what allows me to feel like comfortable saying I was raised Jewish. And then if I didn't go to Jew camp every summer, that it would have just been like, yeah, I got bar mitzvah, but that was it. I think that was the real through line of my Judaism, was just this very like little slow burn of being at camp for 3.5 weeks every year.
And so you can dispel a rumor that I've heard. So you and the other members of Guster did not meet at Nifty, because I don't know if you know this, but that is a widely believed rumor out
No.
there in the Jewish community.
No, we met me and the other, and Brian and Adam, that like three founding dudes all met the first day of college.
No kidding.
And we went on this orientation trip before school even started. And it was like we all went to the woods and there was like, I don't know, like a couple hundred people. And I was looking around for dudes that had played in bands in high school, but like had written original music because I wanted to write songs. I didn't want to be in like a cover band. But Adam went to camp. He went to Cape Cod Sea Camp. But he had a whole camp experience. And then that was a pretty big deal for him. And then my wife actually was a counselor at a boys camp. So she has a bit lot of camp energy too in her life. But yeah, we all met at college and then we've done little weird nifty things here and there, not very many, like one or two.
So you met the first day and you're introducing yourselves and you're like, "Hi, I'm Ryan Miller, I'm the lead singer of Guster." And the other guy was like, "Oh, that's weird. What a coincidence. I'm also in Guster."
No, that's not how it happened. That's not at all how it happened. It'd be cool if it was, because the space-time continuum would have broken in some ways. And then I probably would have been able to find a way to harness that power to do other things. But no, unfortunately, it wasn't the deal.
One of the themes that I think we come back to a lot on the show is just kind of how camp is, and you touched on a little bit, that camp is kind of a place where you find yourself, where you kind of have the freedom to explore, you know, who you are and try different things out. Have you found, whether you've thought about it before or not, have you found that that has impacted you as a musician at all and sort of given you that confidence to you know, experiment, to try different things, you know, or is that way off base?
No, I'm sure that it was. It was too intense of an experience to not be, you know, transformative. You know, like I had a really weird time in high school. I guess most people do, but like, you know, I had a hard time kind of finding my people, and it took me until probably my junior year until I really locked in with like the people who I was like, oh wait, these are my kind of people. And I was always kind of like trying to be popular, or, you know, I was kind of a late bloomer in that sense. And even a late bloomer in college, a lot of my stuff has just come really late. Just even a lot of how I think about the world, it's like I'm just like, oh, now I get it. So I think camp was definitely like part of that experience. I mean, it's just so funny because it exists in its own universe. And I had no context for it when I go home. It's not like I went to camp with people in my high school, you know, because I was one of a few Jews, like it just existed in this weird universe.
Were there kids from Dallas that you went with that you,
I mean, Matt Spett, who was our mutual friend, went to a rival high school. So we were sort of friendly. We were friends through high school in Dallas. And like, I remember when I got my car when I was 16, like I would drive over his house and we would like hang out, and he would turn me on to like They Might Be Giants and Elvis Costello and stuff. And nice. So yeah, there was some of that kind of music stuff that came from him, and I guess maybe through his older brother. But I would assume that's where he got it. And I never had, like I said, I was an only child, so like I never had that I never had that influence, which is part of why everything took me so long.
I was going to ask you. You mentioned sort of like what your crew was like at home. What was your crew like at camp?
You know, I'm trying to. There's not that many people that I still keep in touch with. It was really like Matt's like. You know, I kind of famously, and we say this, I think, to each other, and I think it's true, is that he's my friend I've known the longest, because I think we met either in that first year or that second year. And so I've definitely, he's been my most consistent, you know, and I'm 46 years old, so we're coming on almost 40, some, like 30, like late 30s years of knowing each other, which is pretty crazy. I don't really remember, like, I feel like things kind of moved around a little bit. Like it wasn't like the same six dudes that came, although there was a little bit of that. And like a lot of those people I don't talk to, although I will catch them some of like being on tour but it wasn't like there was a gang. I don't know. I don't think my camp experience was as like sort of like fraternity-ish as like my last couple of years of high school. We ran really heavy. And I think everything kind of just like moved around a little bit more. It was like less like Stand By Me for me personally. But there were definitely like, you know, Matt was a huge thing that came out of that relationship. Like that relationship still endures.
I think that there's a certain badge of honor that each camp has for the people who've sort of made it big from their camps. Do you find in touring, do you find a lot of Green Family Camp people who come to your shows or who try to reach out and say like, "Hey, I remember you from this," or "I know you went to camp with me," or whatever?
I joined the Facebook alumni group in the last couple of years, which I found fascinating because it's like you would always know people that were older than you or younger, and like I have a relationship with Louis, the director, and I think his son might have come to a show of ours recently, but no, I don't feel like I'm like a famous alumni. Also, you know, we're not gigantic in Texas, and we don't play down there that often. So it's like if it were in Boston or something, I'm sure it would be slightly different. But like, you know, we're in Texas like maybe once a year kind of thing. But I do kind of like keeping an eye on the alumni group.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. The Jacobs one just started in the last, maybe like last 6 or 7 months. So it's been fun watching it sort of take off. And the Jacobs Camp actually has the 50th reunion coming up in November. So everybody's posting, all these old photos. I actually was looking for a completely unrelated photo this weekend and came across just like a treasure trove of old camp stuff. And it's funny to think like I guess I'm just a hoarder. I don't think I realized the depth, but then I'm looking at stuff that's like, why did I keep this? Like I found the certificate I got for winning the tetherball tournament when I
Yeah,
was in 10th grade. Like why do I have that now? Why did I keep it then?
Well, you knew why you kept it then because it was important to you. Why you have it now is anyone's guess. But I came back. Yeah, this I don't know. This might run into some of the questions you asked me, but it's like I came back after I won after the Maccabiah thing. I put all my Maccabiah gear on this huge wall, and it was just like all the banners and all the, like every like piece of ephemera was just like it was. It's funny to think I don't even remember. I don't think I remembered until we started talking about it, like what a big deal that was for me.
Yeah, so Maccabiah, so interestingly enough, we did not do that at Jacobs consistently. They do now, but when I was growing up, it's a whole thing. Listeners of the show have heard me talk about this ad nauseum, but everyone was a winner at Jacobs. My dad didn't really believe in winners and losers. It's very utopian. So I did do it was called Yom Sport at Gucci, the other camp I went to, and I've come to find in doing this podcast what an incredibly huge deal Maccabiah games are and how much different they are at each camp. So what was Maccabiah? Do you remember like how many days was it? What was
I
the
feel like
general
it was like
setup?
almost a whole week of camp, you know, and there were four colors, and then they were leaders, you know, like the head, the oldest camp would like lead it, and there was definitely it was more one of the more indelible experiences of it because it was that kind of like camaraderie, and it was like, you know, and you would start to break out of your own age group too, right? So then that came, and I think again the thing it was like really it was like I think I was handed leadership positions in camp in ways that I wasn't in school because it just the way that it was structured. And I think, you know, now kind of like having a microphone in my hand in front of thousands of people very frequently, I think I definitely trace it to that. And obviously just being in a band in college was coming right out of that stuff. So I'm sure that it was linked in that way. And I think that, and again, I think like when I think about Maccabiah, it's definitely like was being chosen as one of the leaders was like a huge thing for me, massive.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm sorry I never got the chance to experience the full onset. But Gucci, it was too. Like if you were one of the leaders of the teams for Yom Sport, I mean that was a commitment. But you were a big deal around
You're a
camp
big deal
for a
for a
few
week.
days.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, let's move on to our Campfires and Color Wars questionnaire. Title still pending. A few A few more questions. Here are some more experiences you had growing up at camp. So, number one, tell us about your first kiss or your most romantic camp moment.
I think I tried to kiss someone there. Like for me, camp stuff really gets conflated with like early sexuality stuff too, because I was so awkward in high school, and we were a little bit all awkward at camp. So like there were definitely a lot of unrequited relationships there. Like maybe there was like a couple pen pals of like women that I think there was one. Oh, and actually I do see her from time to time. This woman that comes in Houston, I think that might have been like a crush for like a couple months after summer camp and stuff, but it was like really awkward kisses with braces and like sneaking out to the girls' camp and all that kind of stuff, where it was just like so down the middle. I feel like it's everybody's camp experience, but it's like part of what it's all about.
Now at Green, what was the policy on sneaking out? Was it sort of like, look the other way, if you're caught, you're busted, but you could get away with it? Was it completely verboten?
I think it was like, I remember a few times people would sneak out and then I would stay back. I don't think it was cool, but I don't think it was like, you're getting kicked out of camp. How do you not, like, it's gotta be expected now as an adult. I'm just like, well, this is what you do at camp. And there was all these like vague setups of like, oh, you need to kiss Debbie. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay, I'm going to kiss Debbie, I guess. But I didn't know, you know, like I said, I was a very late bloomer, but it was definitely a place, you know, there was a dude at my camp who like was like having sex with like someone like 2 or 3 years older, and it was a whole thing, and I was like, oh my god, I can't. And like we were like 15 and we're like, I can't believe it. So I think that was just not the crew I was running around with in high school either. We were all nerds, so it was like there was a lot of this later camp stuff gets conflated with a lot of like this super bad, you know, red, wet, hot American summer stuff, but not like very PG-13, with the exception of this one dude. Way to go.
I feel like our experiences seem very similar. I had camp girlfriends, but none of that was reflected during the year. I was completely awkward at school, and I would come home from camp and be talking about some girl I was dating, and my friends legitimately thought I was making it up. Like, yeah. Not like, ha-ha, just joking with you. Like, I'm pretty sure they definitively thought I was making these people up, which I can see that from their point of view, how they would have thought that.
It's like your girlfriend in Niagara Falls.
You know, that's right.
It's right down the middle.
All right, number two, tell us about your best camp performance.
Best camp performance. I hate to do this again, but I really think it was that being the Maccabiah leader. I think that was like me getting deputized in some kind of weird like manhood thing. I'm gonna go with that.
Now, were you ever in a talent show of any kind? Did you do you have any recollections of singing?
I think I was playing a little bit of music near the end, but because I was in a band in like my senior year. But again, I didn't sing really, like, so there wasn't a lot of, and I wasn't really like, I was always a goofball and was like wanted to get attention, but it was not in that kind of like, it wasn't in that way.
What was the turn from not singing to singing?
Just when we started the band, and Adam, who was, you know, was the singer of his high school band, and I was like, oh, I don't sing, and we were like starting to write music. He's like, oh, you know how to sing, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll sing a little bit. Sorry, now he doesn't sing at all anymore. It was a whole thing, but we're good. We figured it out over the last 27 years.
There you go. Just takes time.
Takes a little time.
All right, number three, tell us your most embarrassing camp moment.
Embarrassing camp moment. I do think it was something. I definitely think it was involving. Well, there's two things. There was one. There was like one that's actually kind of funny, which is like I think there was like a kiss like that was just like the worst. It was all braces and like smashing of lips, and I didn't know what to do. And maybe some blood on the like where you just did was so poor. and I didn't know what I was doing, and it was like we were kind of set up and we were both awkward, and she was really tall and I wasn't, and it just was like we were like kind of boyfriend girlfriend, but we didn't know how to talk to each other for like 36 hours. And then there was one, there was the traumatic one, which I don't think this is quite embarrassing, but it's trauma. Is 1 year I was there and I got put in with the older kids for like a week, and it was a disaster. And I was just like, they were so mean to me, and I had the worst time, and I wanted to go home. And I was crying to my parents, and my parents basically came and like moved me in the middle, which you were not allowed to do. They were
I
just
was gonna
like, he's
say.
got to go back to the younger bunk, and everything clicked in. And I was like, I don't know what the lesson is there, other than I just remember being so traumatized by like, oh, these kids are jerks. And I don't know, like, that wasn't what camp was like for me. It was always great. But so I don't think that's quite embarrassing, but it was definitely trauma.
But that's so interesting. What was the, I mean, obviously, this is a long time ago, but first of all, roughly how old were you?
I don't like I'm the November kid. I don't know. Maybe it was just like they had too many kids of a certain age group, and they were like, oh, we'll just put him up with the generally older kids. And that guy, one of those guys who I remember being really mean to me, actually does come to Guster shows.
Is this gonna
And
be like
he's not mean anymore.
this is gonna be like Phil Collins in the air tonight? You're gonna
Yeah,
put a spotlight
exactly.
on him and sing a
No.
song directly
I
to
don't think. I don't know. I think we were all like 13 years old. Everybody's an asshole.
Well, I was gonna
What were
say
you?
because that could be traumatic in general, but if it was like around the time of puberty, then that would be
Yeah,
even
it
more
definitely
traumatic.
was. It was so traumatic.
Yeah.
So I don't think that was embarrassing. It was just traumatic. I guess I. There's probably more. Yeah, I think when I think about my embarrassing stuff, it's a lot of. It's a lot of like early like boy girl stuff.
Yeah, it's typically pretty ripe for that in my experience.
Yeah,
And it's funny
Jesus.
too. My oldest son is 7 and just starting to go to camp, so I'm starting to learn a lot more about what modern day camp is like as compared to when
Yeah.
we grew up. And yeah, you think about like totally counselors used to like set kids up and be like, you should go out with her, or you guys should kiss or
Yeah,
something.
exactly.
I feel pretty confident you can't do that anymore.
No, that's not happening anymore. There are new rules. A lot of new rules are being written as we speak. Mostly for the right reasons. Probably all for the right reasons, and mostly for good.
That's right. Yeah, it's probably for good, but it is funny to think back on how those things developed.
Oh yeah.
All right, number 4, were you top bunk or bottom bunk?
Think I was almost always top bunk.
Did you have a specific reason?
Well, I was an only child too, so I think it was just fun to like. Yeah, that was just not something I got to do in real life.
So I'm curious because you mentioned that you're an only child, and I have specific things that I associate with being an only child. I'm not an only child, but of people who are. So what was it like for you, if you remember, sort of going from this environment where you're the focus of people's
Yeah.
lives to having essentially, siblings that you had to share space
Yeah.
with and interact with? What was that? Was that difficult for you? Was it different in any way?
I mean, I was always a very social kid anyway. Like I always had friends. I never really like found I found great friends. I never, like I said, I never really locked in with people like my real people until later in school. But I think for me it was just I'm still a total extrovert, like even to this day. So I'm sure that when I was that age, I felt very similarly. And it was really, yeah, I think I just really enjoyed it. I think it was feeling like I had a room full of brothers and, that I never had growing up. I'm sure that was part of what I liked so much about it, was just that there was this built-in thing that would happen every morning. And it was like, 7 in the morning till whatever, 10 o'clock at night. And that was just like nothing I really had at home. So I don't think I ever really thought about it that way, but I'm sure that that was like checked a lot of boxes for me, especially as an extrovert,
Yeah.
my entire life.
All right, number 5. What is your favorite camp song?
It's definitely got an A minor in it. this one I should have thought about because I saw those questions and I didn't do it. May the Lord protect. and defend. May you come to
Yeah, the
be
Sabbath prayer from
a
Fiddler on the Roof.
smile, a shining name. Yeah. May God keep you. Yeah, I really like the mournful minory songs. That was like that. I think it really influenced my music later in life. Yeah,
Now,
those were really good.
you said you've performed a few times at different Nifty things. Do you ever sneak in like a camp type song, or is you just playing the hits?
That's the only one I really know. That's the only one I could probably do. But I do really like. I would. There was something we went to the other day, and I was hearing a bunch of camp songs, and I was like, "Oh, I really like this one." No, I don't sneak them in, but I'm due for like the whole thing. And Louis, our camp director, was also like a really big song leader too. Like he was like a total rock star because he was camp director and he wrote songs. And we had like camp songs that he wrote that were like in the canon and stuff too. Like
Yeah,
he was the
it's
thing.
funny to think about that now. I mean, I literally haven't thought about it until just now, but that is kind of a funny thing. It's like you're putting the songbook together, and it's like, do you put your own song in, or do you have to wait for someone else to be like, "Hey, Louie, why don't we put one of yours in?" And be like, "Oh no, I couldn't possibly do." Well, okay, fine if you insist.
Yeah, but they were like some of the best ones. If I'm remembering which ones are his, I
I
think they were
probably
some of the
know a
best
few of
ones.
his. I'm not
Yeah, I
thinking of
feel
them,
like he
but.
was actually kind of like bigger than Green.
Yeah, I'm pretty
He
sure we
was
had a couple
stuck.
of his. If bonus question, if there was so because it's one of the things that's always funny to me about the camp songbooks is a lot of it is sort of and this goes mostly for Jewish camps, but some of this applies to non-secular camps or other religious camps. There are some that are religious, and then there are some just sort of general interest
Yeah.
songs. Like Feeling Groovy was a very popular song that we would sing. So I'm curious if Guster were to have a song that would make the camp rotation and be played, what song would you want that to be?
Oh, I think it has to be. Well, I don't know. I think Satellite is like a really good, like groovy, like campfire song. We never really had popular songs as part of our songbook, I don't think. They would either be like Jew camp songs, or they would be Louis songs. So like we don't, or it would be the last night, and we would sing like Father and Son. Oh, I did sing that
Oh,
with
that was a
Matt.
big one.
We did do a talent show now that I'm thinking of it. I think Matt and I played that song.
Father and
We played
Son.
like a yeah, I think we played like a or we played a Cat Stevens song like near the end of our tenure there.
Which is ironic considering
I know.
his personal
Similar.
journey.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
There were several
Maybe
Cat
it
Stevens
wasn't.
songs.
Yeah, it wasn't. Maybe it wasn't Father. It's not time to make a change.
Yeah, that's Father
It's
and
too.
Son.
Oh, yeah.
It's
You're
a good
still
song.
young. That's your fault. That I associate with camp.
Yeah, I do too. And it's such a sad song too, which is
It's so
funny.
sad. It's so sad.
But it is a definitively great song.
That is a definitively great song.
Also, if I may, Satellite also a definitively great song. So I would heartily endorse that for
I'd like
the
that
camp
to be
song.
part of it. I'd like to put that in
All
the Jew
right,
camp.
let's make that happen, people
Okay, let's make
listening.
that happen.
All right, well, let's move on to our last segment, Bitches and Roses, aka Roses and Thorns, aka Coals and Diamonds, aka Strawberries and Lemons, aka Peaks and Valleys, aka Pals and Wows. This is a chance to share one good thing going on in your life right now and one bad thing. I will happily allow you as the guest to go first. It can be big or small, but just a chance
Good.
to recap what's going on.
I will go with the good thing. I got a dog last like 2 weeks ago. My family got a little puppy. I
Nice.
think he's over there and it's great. He's awesome. So that's pretty fun. I'm just like getting to know this dog and we're gonna have and he's a puppy, so we're gonna have him for a long time.
Nice.
And the bad thing is that he peed on the floor. Oh, there you go.
Tends to happen.
Yeah, he's 4 months old. What are you gonna do? Just trying to get him not do it again.
Well, my bitch. I work in social media in my day job. Social media, if you're not aware, is very subjective. And so I work for Buffalo Wild Wings. We are a sports bar brand. We like to talk about sports. And as we are recording this episode, the Saints and Rams played yesterday, and I'm a huge Saints fan. The Saints got screwed by the refs very famously in the NFC Championship game last year. They got screwed again by the refs yesterday, and we tweeted something about it that I would argue was very much sympathetic to the plight of the Saints fans. But the Saints fans online felt differently.
Yeah.
And so all day today we were getting blown up by a bunch of pissed off Saints fans. And I wanted to just be like, I'm a Saints fan. So, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. And I'm okay taking the L's when they happen. It's gonna happen. Yeah. It's just so aggravating to me that it's coming from like literally the team I'm the biggest fan of that I would never troll.
It's hard. So internet's hard sometimes.
Yeah, it is.
As you know.
And my rose is, I'm not sure if this episode will come out before or after this happens, but I just turned 40 in the past year, and a group of my friends and I who grew up at camp together are actually getting together this weekend for sort of a 40th birthday camp reunion. So there are a bunch of us descending on Austin, actually, for the weekend. And it's going to be super fun. A lot of people who I am in close contact with, but also a lot of people who I haven't seen in years. And we're just going to kind of hang out for the weekend and probably reminisce about old times. So I'm super excited about that. It'll be a lot of fun. And with that, that is our show.
Okay, good job.
If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and the other podcast listening to, tool you can find. If you want to find us on social media and make fun of the things that I do in my day job, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We are at Summer Camp Pod, and on Instagram at Campfires and Color Wars. And Ryan, if you people wanted to find you online, where would you prefer us to send them?
I run the Guster Twitter, but we have Guster I kind of do the Twitter. We all have our little fiefdoms, so I do the Twitter, Brian does the Instagram, the office does Facebook, Adam doesn't do social media, Luke doesn't do social media, so I'd say Guster's good.
Do you have fun doing Twitter for Guster? Do you get into people?
You should check it out. I don't take it very seriously.
Okay, I definitely will.
All I do is I just wait. I just put in Guster, and whenever people say mean things about us, I just send funny GIFs.
That's awesome.
That's my whole move.
James Blunt is apparently a hilarious Twitter follow because people are
I think I know this about him. Like, he's very self-aware.
I love it. I totally respect it.
We have friends in common, and he's supposedly a super, super cool dude.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for that. If you want to hear more from me, I'm on Twitter at Micah Hart. And drop us a line sometime if you want to reach out and tell us about other musicians that went to your camps, or tell us what your favorite what would be on your Mount Rushmore of Jewish rock bands up there with Fish and Guster. I'd love to hear what the rest of that would look like.
Of my camp experience, you mean?
What's
like
that?
What is my Jew camp like? Who are my Jew camp bands that I like? Quite.
I was asking that for just the audience, but I would love to know who your Jewish camp bands are.
I thought you were talking to me. I'm like, oh, that's great. I don't know.
No, I'd love to know.
Who are my Jewish pallies? I don't know. That's a great question. I didn't even – that would have been a good – I don't know. There was so much music that was in my stuff. I don't know. This. You were doing a wrap-up. I'm not being helpful right now.
No, it's totally cool. But with that, we will say goodbye, and Ryan, the camp I grew up at, Jacobs, my dad would always say at the beginning of the summer that, camp goes by so fast and time is precious. So he would always, his motto was, don't waste a minute. So I will say to you, don't waste a minute, Ryan. And you can say back to me,
don't waste a minute, Micah. Oh, I'm not going to waste it.
No, that was great.
Happiness runs in a circular motion. Thought is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You can have everything if you let yourself be. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs.